Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
And a fond hello to you, our most valued guest. This is Jane Kawaski, Dr. J, along with my co-host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico. I'm an experimental psychologist and chief science officer of our parent company, Social Network Intermedia, LLC, of which Jim is the CEO. Today's guest is Eric Qualman. He has been called a digital Dale Carnegie. For the last 16 years, he has helped to grow the digital capabilities of companies including Cadillac, Earthlink, EF Foundation, Yahoo, Travelzoo, and AT&T. He owns the social media blog Socialnomics.com and wrote the book by the same name. Mr. Qualman holds a BA from Michigan State University and an MBA from the University of Texas. He is also the author of What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube. Eric, welcome to the Social Network Show.
Thanks, Dr. J. It's great to be here.
Welcome back, Eric. And you know what? Every time I look up on YouTube, there's Vegas.
Hey, it's always there. It's always there. There's always this additive stuff. So you got to refresh the page for YouTube and you'll see some stuff and go, man, I can't believe that guy, girl, or corporation just did that.
Mm-hmm. And I looked up What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube on Amazon.com, and there's quite a few titles that start out with What Happens in Vegas. But just for our listeners who haven't heard of your book on that topic, it's basically a lot of great tips about privacy and maintaining your digital reputation and making it a reputation you can be proud of. So I wanted to talk with you about Snapchat today. What is the scoop?
All right, so Snapchat, it's one word for those who've never heard of Snapchat. You've probably heard of it if you have a teenage daughter or a college student. 77% of all college students use Snapchat. And what Snapchat is if you remember, or not remember, but if you ever go and watch the Mission Impossible movies, that this message will self-destruct in 4 seconds. That is essentially what Snapchat is doing. Is it allows me to send a message to you, and then you open it, and it only lasts for 4 seconds, however much you want to set it for. But that's essentially it. The message will self-destruct. And again, it's wildly popular. 77% of college students use it. It's also the largest messaging app by volume. So WhatsApp got a lot of press recently because it was purchased by Facebook for $19 billion. But WhatsApp doesn't have as much volume as Snapchat does. So again, wildly successful platform that's growing and essentially getting to the point of what my book's about is that a lot of us are trying to get a little bit of our privacy back, and so they think that Snapchat helps with that.
But there's a catch to it, isn't there? Because even though Snapchat isn't keeping your information and your pictures, the person you send it to, what is the catch to that?
I always talk to anybody. I say, no matter what tool you use, Snapchat or whatever you think your privacy settings on Facebook is, just assume this is going to be in the public forum. So you're helping mitigate that risk if you use a tool like Snapchat, but also don't feel like you're in the safety zone to where you can post anything that you want on Snapchat and there's no ramifications to it. And so even at the early stages when it first came out, is it people could screenshot on their phone, then they had to figure out workarounds to figure out, okay, let's identify when people screenshot a Snapchat on a snap on their phone so that it sends an alert to everybody that, hey, this person's, like, for some reason, screen saving your Snapchat, which is kind of a taboo, and it's not with the culture of things. So it's kind of like, hey, look, this is the jerk that's taking screenshots of that on their phone. So again, reminder to everybody, all your listeners, that even if you use tools like this, that, you know, you're never necessarily safe. You need to make sure that you're living your life as if your mother's watching you, because all this stuff will probably get out at some point.
Is there any angle for Snapchat with marketing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you first hear that and you go, well, what's their business model? I mean, how are they going to make any kind of money? And so they do have advertising in there. And funny enough is that in this hyper-connected world, since the users know it's very a time-sensitive item, they're hyper-focused on it. So they're, like, drawn in for those 4 seconds. They're looking directly at the picture, where other items are kind of doing other things as well. But if you look at it, that's what's interesting about Snapchat is you're in this crazy hyper-connected world. It's the one thing that kind of just stops everything for a moment and grabs our attention to say, I've got to look at this because it's going to go away. And so companies like Acura, HBO, Taco Bell, they've had quite some success actually using the Snapchat platform to market to these folks. And obviously those brands I mentioned, they're looking after college students and also that younger demographic. So it's really popular for them, for their chief marketing officers to be able to use a tool like Snapchat.
Thank you. What about, you know, like you say, did you say that Facebook made the bid for $19 billion? Did they acquire the company? Or I think they failed, didn't they?
No, they bought WhatsApp for $19 billion, yeah.
Oh, WhatsApp. And that's a similar service? Is that what you're saying?
So, yeah, WhatsApp is basically what's called group texting. It's a little different service. Snapchat is all about sending messages that are private. They self-destruct. WhatsApp was just one of the first group messaging tools that became fairly popular, especially in like South America and other foreign countries, because it allowed you to text without being charged for it. So they were able to figure out a way, and I'm not going to bore your audience with the technology, figure out a way so that you weren't going to get charged for every time that you texted your friends internationally.
It used the internet rather than a phone service.
Correct. Right, so it went to the IP, so it's the technology they're using, so that you are going to get charged from your cellular carrier for that ping. Then they advanced it to where you could have, like, group messaging. And so now the iPhone has capabilities like that, but that's why WhatsApp was so popular. And Facebook purchased it for $19 billion, which a lot of experts, including myself, would say they probably overpaid for that. Time will tell, but I thought that was kind of a ridiculous amount to pay for a service like that. And they've already lost a lot of subscribers because people are concerned about what Facebook's going to do on the privacy side with that data. Now that Facebook paid the $19 billion, they're going to have to try to make that money back by advertising. And the most valuable thing to the advertisers is your data. And so that's been an interesting thing to watch play out. And so we'll see what happens there.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about Vine for a second. I remember when Vine first came out and it did this 7-second video, I believe, and this is the best of my recollection, that one of the key people at Vine put their whole scrapbook, childhood scrapbook, in 7 seconds. And frankly, I couldn't make out anything.
Yeah, no, I think I'm not a big fan of Vine. I think it's one of those moments to where people start to realize, oh, an animated GIF? We did that in 1990. And so the main difference, too, for the audience is that Vine is basically Twitter's shorter version of video, so that you can post 6-second videos out there on Vine. They don't expire. They last forever. But that's what Vine is. They've got competition because on Instagram, you can post a 15-second spot, video spot, and that's probably more easy to digest, as you mentioned, Jim. So it's probably a better service.
Do you have any familiarity with Mixbit? You know, the founders of YouTube are actually in there. Are you familiar with that one at all?
Mixbit?
Yeah.
I don't think so, but if you start explaining it to me, maybe it'll jog my memory.
Well, I can't do that because I know something you don't know. What it is that these guys are actually, they're going longer with YouTube. So it's at Mixbit. It's mixbit.com. And it's a format in which you can make up videos from videos online or your own up to an hour long. So that's just another side of things.
Hence the name Mix.
Oh, that's great. I hope I'm not paying for the servers.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about servers, since you mentioned that. The server banks use a tremendous amount of power, of course. And are you familiar with any of the issues around that?
I mean, vaguely. I mean, so that Google's always trying to make certain that they're not killing the environment off by all the power that they're using.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to figure out what is that carbon footprint based on the server data they're using. But obviously, there's more experts on that than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like a lot of people, I'm conscious about what's my effect on the environment. And fortunately, a lot of the Silicon Valley companies are aware of it, and they're doing the best that they can to make sure that they're not part of the problem, but part of the solution. And so that's what Google's trying to constantly make it so that they're not using as much server power so that it's not chewing up all this power out there.
You know, Eric, by the way, just if we may drift back in time just for a second, I just want to say to our listeners, and just for the record, that your book, Socialnomics, is one of the most powerful books, I think, out there in the world about this hyper-connected world. And it was a big influence on me. And I think one of the tributes to Socialnomics, which, folks, if you haven't read that book, you're missing, 50% of what's going on in the world, I think, which is, that's quite a bit. But anyway, the idea is that when I go in Barnes & Noble, that book's still on the shelf. And in this world, I mean, how many years ago was that first come out?
Yeah, no, it's been a wild ride. It's been a marathon instead of a sprint. It came out, and I wrote it in 2008.
Okay. And I mean, in internet years, digital years, it has been on the shelf 100 years. I mean, we've had a lot of authors, but books come and go like, what did Dory Clark say on our show? Like one day a newspaper, you're reading a newspaper, the next day it's wrapping fish.
It's been really a nice ride, and I was faced with a nice problem. We've had to revise it twice just to update some of the trends and tools that have happened in there. So it's a nice problem to have. It's been thanks to my fans. So thanks to all my fans out there. I really appreciate it.
I'm your number one fan.
I love it. That's why I keep going on the show. This is great.
Hey, do you still hold the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest podcast?
That was a team effort. There's a lot of people, but yeah, I was part of the team. I was fortunate to be asked to be on that team, and we were able to do it. It was kind of more of a feat in technology to make sure the podcast didn't break at any point in time.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no, I was just part of the team, and it was great.
How long was it, Jane?
I don't know.
Okay, Eric, you better know.
Ours is only 30 minutes.
How long was it?
36 hours. So we got a good start here. We only have 36 and a half. We have 35 and a half more hours to go.
Oh, we can do that, for God's sake.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Eric. So in our next segment, we're going to take up on some ideas about trends and investing and some of those topics.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Kelly Keller, an intellectual property attorney specializing in internet law and social media issues. Join me on The Kelly Keller Show right here on the Social Network Station. Together with my guests, we will tackle tough legal problems presented by the ever-increasing use of social media in everyday business. Through dynamic conversations, we will discuss your rights and responsibilities in the new media world so the hard work you have put into developing your brand, business, and products does not go to waste. How does the law's response to the social media explosion affect you? Join me on The Kelly Keller Show to learn more.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Eric Qualman, Socialnomics, What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube, a masterful writer and actually innovator, one of the digital experts in this hyper-connected world, with Dr. J. McAfee, John McAfee. You guys remember the old, the security encryption and security on your privacy on your internet that this guy invented. Heard him speak, and I just want to let him know that we really appreciate his innovation on privacy and help keeping us safe on the internet. So back to Eric Qualman, who again is one of the smartest guys on the internet. Eric, what's astonishing you these days?
I mean, what blows me away is still getting back to kind of Snapchat is just how fast some of these tools rise up. And if you look at like Snapchat, they're 70% female. There's 400 million snaps per day in the United States. There's also companies that are starting to recruit on Snapchat. So it's crazy as you think about it. We talk about LinkedIn sometimes, and LinkedIn's huge, but it's really about also Likeable Media out of New York. They're starting to actually recruit people on Snapchat because they know that those college students that they want to fill their ranks are on there. So they're starting to use it as a recruiting tool as well.
So Likeable Media, that's interesting. Is that the exact name of their company?
Oh, yeah. They're very, very – they're doing fantastic stuff. It's Dave and Carrie Kirpin. Dave Kirpin wrote the book Likeable Media, which is still one of the top, if not the top, selling this year book on social media. It's a fantastic book for all your listeners out there. And he started another company, Likeable Local, that gets more to the local level with small companies. So that's also stuff out there helping like all the dentists in the country to get up on social media, have a presence, supply content to their end users. And so Dave Kirpin's branched off from Likeable Media to start Likeable Local, and his beautiful, lovely, and intelligent wife, Carrie Kirpin, actually runs Likeable Media out of New York, and they work with Fortune 500 brands on their social and mobile strategies.
Interesting that you mentioned local, because that, of course, is what Google is really targeting now to develop a connection with local through broadcasting or joining with broadcasters.
Well, that's true. And by the way, just a shout out to Christine Merritt, who came on our show and talked about Google and their innovations. And she was just absolutely wonderful on our show and interested in the small and medium-sized businesses in the world. And so if you haven't had a chance to listen to that show, Christine Merritt on the Social Network Show, and it's at thesocialnetworkshow.com. So back with Eric. Eric, what else is cutting edge, man? I mean, you're there, but you can see ahead. Who else should we be paying attention to?
I mean, some of the disruptors, if you look at a company like Dataminr, so there's all the companies that we know, like Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, but there's also all these other companies that actually use the data that's available from these networks to help other companies. And so what Dataminr specializes in is actually spotting trends before they happen by looking at the conversation that's happening on Twitter. So, for example, they have large financial institutions and hedge funds that use their tool to get the data so that if they know that all of a sudden everyone's saying something negative about Suarez, the soccer player in the World Cup that's the biter, is biting people.
And seen his picture.
That all of a sudden they know from their data, from other data, that teams that do well in the World Cup, their actual gross domestic product usually goes up. It's crazy. But if all of a sudden one of the best players in the world is not going to play for Uruguay, all of a sudden if they have a lot of investment in Uruguay, their hedge fund's going to automatically start selling that off. Or let's say there's an earthquake in some sector of Japan and they're heavily invested in Japan, then they're going to know it probably before the news breaks it because they're grabbing it this feed off of Twitter and they're quickly able to adjust their selling on that. Or conversely, if they see something, all of a sudden a name starts to happen that's a company name on a product and people are loving it, they're going to see it first and be able to adjust their hedge fund to buy that company's stock.
Okay. So, I get it.
That's kind of intense stuff, but that's what a company like Dataminr is doing.
Oh, that's brilliant. Now, there's one other thing I want to bring up, just this a little bit of a help for me, but I'm not a technical guy. That's my Achilles heel. I look to other people, but I don't know if you've written on Medium. That's medium.com. And I think that the founders at Twitter involved, et cetera. But when I'm there and when I write on that platform, I've called Medium the parchment of the internet. And what I mean by that is when it's so highly calibrated to a keyboard that when I write on Medium, it is absolutely superior to anything, any WordPress, anything I've ever written on. So I was wondering if you know about it and know, I know they built the technology from the ground up, but have you ever written on Medium?
I'm going to. I haven't written on it yet. I've heard about it, and I know that people like you love it, so I guess you're the tipping point. I'm going to go out there and do it, and that's what it's all about, right? Is that now we've got the news comes to us. It's pushed by to us by influencers like you and thought leaders like you two.
Thank you.
That's why I'm on the show. I've learned something new, so I'm going to get out there and make sure that I finally use it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, man, it's like nothing I've ever written on in terms of like with a keyboard. The other thing I wanted to ask you, too, is there anything that you would do? And like if you were going to advertise like What Happens in Vegas goes up on YouTube, that amazing book, or Socialnomics, your other book, which is, I think, the Bible out there. Would you, if you had a choice, would you advertise or promote your book on a cell phone or, I mean, like on an iPhone or an iPad? I mean, is there any difference in that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the demographics, like most sites, 45% of their site traffic's coming from mobile users. And that's just ratcheting it up. If you look at 2017, two-thirds of all, everything we consume on the phone is going to be video. So everything's going full on the phone. That's why I always say make sure that you think mobile first when you're designing your sites and
right.
your digital strategy. And
okay.
that's new for everybody. Even if you're a brand new company,
okay.
it's still new for you.
So okay.
even brand new companies make the mistake of just looking at their nice 20-inch screen rather than designing everything for mobile.
Okay.
But by all means, I would advertise and market. I don't advertise a lot. I do more inbound marketing. But I would do all my inbound marketing tailored mobile first and then go down the other channels from there.
And you mean, when you say mobile, you don't mean an iPad, you mean a phone, correct?
Yeah, I mean, these tablets are kind of children's toys. You kind of hand them to a 3 to 5 year old, but everyone's going to be on just their phone device.
Okay.
Which we probably won't call it a phone soon because that's just one feature of many. It's really just, I don't know, they call them smartphones, but there's probably a better term for it. Moving forward, but there's a lot of cool technology. Here's a piece of technology you may not be aware of, but it's really cool. It's out of MIT, and what it does is it allows you to read so much faster because it only puts one word in front of you at a time.
Hmm.
And the average person can read at 240 words per second, but I know with this tool I can read about 500 words per second just because it makes it easier. Instead of having to scroll and losing your place, it's actually just populating the words quickly in front of you.
And I hope you mean per minute.
well, what's it called? Where
yeah,
do we find
what
this?
What is that called?
Oh, did I say per minute? I meant
per second?
Yeah. Did I say per second? I think it's, yeah, it's 240 words per minute. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. No worries. What's it called? No. What's this called in MIT?
A spritz.
Can you spell that, please?
S-P-R-I-T-Z, spritz.
Oh, spritz. I think yeah, I'll have
to,
that.
If you
okay.
go to their website, they'll actually, you can look at the demo and you can adjust it to see how fast you can read. It's crazy.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Hey, you know, you mentioned that investment trends, futures, hedge market, what? That made me think of a guy we had on the show not long ago, Chris Camillo. He wrote Laughing at Wall Street, and he has a similar program to spot social media trends.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah. Social, didn't he call it social investing or something like that? Mm-hmm. It's really good, though. It's a great show, too. This guy's smart. I'm not saying he's smarter than you, Eric. I'm just saying he's smart.
Hedge chatter?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's interesting. we'll get him out there. But Eric, bottom line, I mean, look, what I realized in this show, and I knew intuitively before, but you've proved it on this show, is if we want to know what's going on in the world, just get Eric back on the show, right?
Oh, you're very kind. You guys are setting the bar very high. It'll force me to make sure I know what the heck's going on.
Well,
oh,
we're going to make sure you do it. Here's what it is. From the Cutting Edge with Eric Qualman. That's going up on LinkedIn.
Oh,
yeah.
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Eric.
No, thank you. It's always an honor, and I learn just as much as you, if not more, so I really appreciate it.
Okay, man. You'll be on LinkedIn from the Cutting Edge with Eric Qualman. I love it. Okay.
And thank you for keeping us company today on the Social Network Show, where you hear commentary and analysis of our connected networked world, including practical advice from top business and marketing mentors, news from people combating cyberbullying and abuse, as well as experts on privacy, surveillance, and women and girls empowerment online. Please follow us at Twitter. That's a good one. On Twitter, at Social Net Show for Jim and Social Net Show 2, number 2. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us via questions at thesocialnetworkshow.com. Please have fun, be safe, online and off, until we meet here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.